time, live and coast to coast, the advocates bring you the arguments on both sides of a public question, while there's a chance for you to affect what happens. Tonight's program comes to you from Arizona State University in Tempe, only a few miles from some of the country's largest Indian reservations. Of the 28,000 students at this modern university, some 200 are Indians. And one of the distinctive features of this attractive campus is the Grady Gamage Memorial Auditorium, designed by Frank Lloyd Wright. Our setting tonight, we consider the future of the American Indian. The specific question is this: should we continue the system of Indian reservations indefinitely? Advocate Greenberg.
We certainly should, Mr. Palmieri. We believe that Indian reservations must be continued. We need United States supervision to preserve the lands on the reservation. A federal agency is required to help the Indians and make them economically self-sufficient. And Indian laws have to be preserved to protect the culture of the Indian tribes. With us here tonight to tell us the view of most American Indians are two Indian witnesses. Mr. Robert L. Bennett, Commissioner of Indian Affairs from 1966 to 1969, an Oneida Indian, and Vine Deloria Jr., a Standing Rock Sioux, and well-known spokesman for the New Indian Viewpoint.
Advocate Miller.
Representative Snyder, the reservation system has failed. We propose to transfer those lands to the Indian tribes to be held subject to the restrictions they place upon them, to abolish the Bureau of Indian Affairs and distribute its budget to each tribe yearly in proportion to the amount of land that it owns. We propose that that happen after a phased period of 10 years. We propose that because reservations have totally failed, because the Bureau of Indian Affairs has failed, and because the Indian today deserves legal equality. With me to support that position are Mr. Richard Dodge, a Menominee Indian from Menominee County, Wisconsin, and Mr. Leyland Brightman, a Sioux Indian and director of the Indian Affairs Department at the University of California at Berkeley.
Well, there are some 600,000 Indians in the United States. 100,000 of these are in the 3rd Congressional District of Arizona. And sitting next to me is the man who represents that district, Republican Congressman Sam Steiger. And he also serves on the Indian Affairs Subcommittee of the House of Representatives. Well, Congressman, the Indians who are occupying Alcatraz Island are protesting the conditions of the American Indian throughout the whole country. What are those conditions as you see them?
Well, Mr. Camilleri, I think the statistics or the numbers really speak for themselves. The Indians who are employable, of an employable age, are 70 to 75% underemployed or unemployed. The Indian can expect to live some 20 years less than the non-Indian in this country. The Indian infant mortality is double that of the non-Indian. These are just some statistical evidences of what the general condition of the Indian in the country today is. It's comfortable and accurate, unfortunately, to say that the Indian in the main has been the victim of broken treaties, an overabundance of unfulfilled promises, and really almost a virtual campaign to exclude him from society in general, other than that within which he resides immediately. And I think it's fair to characterize the assistance which the Indian does get as being insufficient as far as the needy adult Indian is concerned.
So what do we do about this?
Well, of course, there's lots of things that can be done, and in my view, in general, the best hope for this is to reach the children, because frankly, we've done such a bad job with the adults that they are more difficult to reach and more difficult to succeed with these people.
Well, what's the situation with the Indian schools?
Well, the Indian schools also are difficult to characterize because there are Indian schools which are run by the BIA, there are Indian schools which are run by the tribe, there are Indian schools which are run by the state, there are Indian schools which are run by HEW. But in the main, the Indian schools suffer from the same problems that our schools do. They're overpopulated and they're understaffed. Indian children in the main suffer from indifferent to worse medical care. The job opportunities, we know, are simply limited.
Well, who controls all this?
Well, the Bureau of Indian Affairs has the responsibility via the edict of Congress. The BIA, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, controls 50 million acres, which is about the reservation, the number of acres in a reservation status in this country. And the Bureau really controls the lives of it's fair to say the lives of the 600,000 Indians who live on these reservations.
All right, now let's take these reservations. As I understand it, reservation is an area of land set aside for a particular Indian tribe. Now, how did that happen?
Well, the reservations really were the result of a bad deal on the part of the Indians in the main, because they lost a military battle, and this was a method of disposing of the least desirable land in a specific area and to limit the Indians and therefore limit the problem. That's the specific effect of the reservations.
And who runs the reservations?
The reservations are literally run, completely dominated by the Secretary of the Interior through the Commission of Indian Affairs and the Bureau.
Do they own the land? The federal government owns the land?
The Indians actually own the land, but they can do nothing with it. They can't lease it or sell it or dispose of it or put it to use without the consent of the Secretary of the Interior. And he, of course, must have the consent of his Commission of Indian Affairs and the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
So how would you characterize the situation?
Well, in my view, it's been a very bad job, and it's been a situation in which the BIA has been asked to by Congress to perform an impossible task for a bureaucracy. It's been asked to phase itself out of existence, and no bureaucracy is to do that. And the one thing that we're going to discuss here this evening, and I think the significance of which is lost on most of us who have not worked with this problem, is the emotional impact of the word termination. There is, I guarantee you, there is not a single Indian within hearing distance of this program who's going to be convinced that the termination is a good thing as a result of this 1 hour's discussion.
All right. Well, tonight, we're discussing continuing the reservation system, and that involves three key features. First, federal control of the land. Second, a special federal agency to administer assistance programs. Third, immunity of the reservations from most state laws, including property taxes, family laws, and many criminal laws. Now, for example, some tribes do not allow women to vote. Most have their own courts and their own system of justice. Now, these are the issues in controversy tonight. Congressman, we're not asking you to make up your mind tonight, but I want you to feel free to ask questions of the advocates or the witnesses. Ladies and gentlemen, we ask our advocates to present not their personal opinions, but rather what they consider important and responsible argument. Now to the cases. Mr. Greenberg, tell us why we should continue indefinitely the Indian reservation system.
Because it's time for us to stop doing things to the Indians and for us to stop deciding what we can do for the Indians. Congressman Steiger, if the Indians who listen to this program are against termination, it's because termination is a bad thing. It's because termination is another thing that we propose to do to them. We have to begin by keeping our treaty commitments and our moral commitments. The Indian tribes have to be assured the right to continued existence and to determine their own destiny. Now, we talked about the status of Indians with Senator George McGovern of South Dakota. He's chairman of the Senate Subcommittee on Indian Affairs. The senator has a large Indian population in his state, and he made his views crystal clear.
It would be a disaster of major proportions to terminate the Indian reservation system. These first Americans do not wish termination, and I think the federal government has a moral responsibility to respect their wishes. The ill-conceived termination of all federal responsibility for the Menominee Indians of Wisconsin in the 1950s gives us some indication of the tragic consequences of a termination policy. I think most American Indians want to preserve their own individual identity as Indian citizens, and they wish to do that within the reservation structure that has existed throughout our national history.
As the senator says, the best reason for continuation of the reservations is that most Indians want them for at least three reasons. First, survival of Indian culture is centered on the reservations. To many Indian tribes, the land is sacred and forms a fundamental part of their religious beliefs. To the Taos Pueblo Indians, their Blue Lake is sacred and they revere it. The Navajo tribal ceremonies are rooted in the land and the four sacred mountains that surround their reservation. Secondly, any Indian who wishes to leave the reservation and live under Anglo law can freely leave the reservation. But those who remain, particularly traditional Indians who live according to their folkways, should be allowed to live under tribal laws enforced by tribal courts. Third, exemption from state land taxes, which is an example of the equality that Mr. Miller wants to bring to the Indians. I call it great inequality. Is another, this exemption from land taxes is another aspect of tribal sovereignty, and it's essential to protect the land from forced sale. Now, we realize that reservations have long been seen as primitive pockets of poverty, but Indian self-determination on reservations does not mean abandonment of the Indians by the federal government. Almost all Indians recognize the need for the federal economic assistance guaranteed in the Indian treaties. In the last decade, with federal assistance and approval, many tribes have begun to show progress within the reservation system. Kanita is a resort in Oregon developed and operated by the Indians of the Warm Springs Reservation. By retaining their Indian heritage and using natural hot springs, they've created a profit-making tribal enterprise. At Shiprock, New Mexico, on the Navajo Reservation, Fairchild Cameron Instrument Corporation has leased facilities from the Tribal Council and is employing 1,200 Navajos on electronic assembly work. It's true, too, that the education of Indians has been negative and culturally castrating for too long, both in BIA schools and in public schools. But reservation Indians have made strides in finding ways of educating their children to take the best from both Indian and Anglo cultures, giving the children pride in their distinctive heritage, but equipping them to compete within the dominant society if they wish to.
Nowhere will you find Navajo language being used as medium of instruction, but here you have it. And here you have a great deal of Navajo culture input into practically all of our programs.
I would be very much in favor of other schools similar to Rough Rock. The idea is tremendous, where Indians and parents are involved, the community is involved. This is theirs, and you just see that they're very proud of it, because they are a part of it.
Okay, boys and girls, what are we supposed to talk when we're on this side of the room?
English.
English. Okay, very good. Okay, this is Mary.
No one man or one tribe speaks for all Indians, but one young man, a Standing Rock Sioux, has become a spokesman for those Indians who believe that their cultural heritage has much of value for both mainstream America and for Indians. Former executive director of the National Congress of American Indians and author of Custer Died for Your Sins, Vine Deloria Jr.
Welcome to the Advocates, Mr. Deloria.
Thank you.
Mr. Deloria, if there is failure in American Indian life, as suggested by Mr. Miller, is it in the reservation system or something else?
I think it's a failure to keep the two basic portions of the treaties. The early treaties and the later agreements state the United States should protect the Indian tribes from other foreign nations and from its own citizens who might infringe upon Indian rights and property. I think any failure in the system has been the failure of the federal government to adequately protect Indian rights, but the reservations themselves are Indian land.
Do Indians want reservations continued?
I think almost every Indian in the country wants reservations continued.
Do those Indians who live off of reservations want reservations continued?